By midnight, the mounts were too tired to go any farther. Reluctantly, Kuno and Marcella made camp in a boulder nest halfway up a flame-shaped scarp, with a spring murmuring up from a cairn of mossy stones.
How far away do you think they are now?
Marcella smoothed her sweat-damp hair back from her temples as she sat near the small fire Kuno had built from the nearly smokeless branches of a curl-leaf shrub.
By their tracks, I'd say 2 hours. 3 at most.
Will we catch up to them tomorrow?
Sitting Indian style, she held a tin cup of coffee before her. Her cotton shirt, unbuttoned below her neck to the cooling breeze, was dirty and crusted from dried sweat. Her hair was disheveled, her cheeks streaked with dust.
That's what I figure.
And then what?
Then we watch them for a while. Trail them. Maybe get ahead and set up an ambush.
Her eyes widened slightly, brightening at the prospect.
See.
Marcella jerked her head up. Kuno grabbed his Colt from the holster, coiled around his saddle horn.
Shh. Stay here.
He kicked sand on the fire's glowing remains. Then he slipped into his boots and, revolver in hand, stole away from the camp. He walked around boulders, gradually working his way up the escarpment. He paused near a cedar, frozen and listening. On the breeze, he detected a faint musky smell, like the odor of scraped animal plew left to sweeten in the sun. Indians often smelled that way. Cougars and mountain lions did, too. He thumbed back the Colt's trigger and edged around a boulder, ducking under the branches of a pine growing through a crack in the escarpment. Shortly, he came to a shelf a foot above him. There was a V-shaped crack in the middle of the shelf. He was about to climb through when 2 gold eyes blazed atop the shelf's rim. Silhouetted against the stars, a tufted tail whipped like a black snake. The black shape of the cat plunged toward him, paws forward. As he sailed backward, his right arm and hand burned and throbbed. Then everything went numb as his head hit the rock slab, his vision dimming. He smelled the pungent, urine-like odor of the cat as it leaped to its feet, sprang off its back legs, and disappeared somewhere above his field of vision. He forced himself onto his chest and grabbed the Colt. Thumbing back the hammer, he waited in case the cat returned. The pine needles stabbed his chest like broken glass. His gun butt was slick from the cut the cat had opened in his hand. Something moved to his right.
It's me.
The girl stood on the other side of a shallow trough, moonlight winking off Kuno's rifle in her hands.
What was it? Cut?
Painter. Must have been after the horses.
Holstering his gun, Kuno climbed to his knees. His shirt was blood-soaked, and his right hand screamed with pain. He couldn't see much in the dark, but he knew the cat had opened him up. His head pounded from the fall.
How bad are you hurt? Is that your shooting hand?
He raised his arm, trying to flex his hand, but it felt like the muscles had been cut deep.
Son of a bitch!
Ugh. He walked back to the camp and threw several chunks of curl leaf on the fire with his good hand. When the flames licked up, revealing the camp with its tack, panniers, burlap sack of cooking utensils, and disheveled blankets, he sat on a rock and unbuttoned the cuff of his shirt sleeve. Propping his elbow on his thigh, he carefully rolled the sleeve back from his forearm.
Fill the rack pan with water.
She'd crouched beside him and was studying his bloody hand and arm. The cat's claws had cut 2 jagged lines from his middle knuckle to his wrist. A third gash ran from his thumb straight across his hand. The skin around the cuts looked tattered as torn burlap.
Madre Maria, now what are we going to do? Can you shoot with your left hand?
Just get me the goddamn water.
Turning away, she slapped her hands against her thighs with disgust.
Oh, I am in Apache country with a cripple.
Your concern is heartwarming.
He inspected his bloody arm. When she'd filled the tin bowl with water, she set it on a flat stone by the fire. He bathed the arm and hand in the bowl, cleaning the cuts. He found himself sharing the girl's exasperation. He wouldn't be shooting with the hand for a good long time. With Hudson only a few miles ahead, the thought turned his stomach raw. It must have done the same thing to Marcella. When he'd finished wrapping his arm with an old shirt from his saddlebags, he looked around and saw her sitting against her saddle, boots crossed, angrily sipping whiskey from a bottle and eyeing him with disgust. He picked up his rifle, inspected the action, then grabbed the bottle from her hands.
Hey!
I need that worse than you do.
Then he headed into the darkness to keep watch for Indians and any more goddamn cats.
Ugh. Seems like we've been riding forever.
Clevis O'Malley rode lazily atop his short-legged dun, trailing a dapple gray pack horse on a lead rope.
How the hell much further do we have, anyways?
You only been riding 3 days, Cleve.
They were riding single file, Hudson in the lead, O'Malley behind him. Two lumbering pack mules followed Saber and Wilkes on lead lines.
Yeah, I figure we got 2-3 more, everything goes all right.
Paige, what'd you say the name of this place was we're headed for?
Wilkes was feeling much better now that his arm was healing. The riding had badgered him at first, but now the dry sun had worked its magic. He wasn't worrying so much about blood poisoning anymore.
Wild Horse.
Wild Horse?
That's what he said, didn't he?
Billy Saber rode third in line, Wilkes behind him.
Drain the piss out of your ears, Kenny.
Shut up, Billy.
Shut up your own
self. Boys, boys!
Hudson raised a placating hand without turning around.
That's enough tail twisting.
Sorry, Paige. He gets on my nerves, that's all. Damn crybaby. Weeping over that bullet burn. Shh. I've been shot so many times my ma liked to mistake me for a sieve. You didn't hear me bawling about it.
Saber snugged his Confederate cap down to keep the blistering sun off his ears.
My family's prone to infection. And if you call me any more names, you son
Boys!
Of a bitch!
Hudson craned around in his saddle.
If I have to tell you one more time to quit hoorahing each other, I'm gonna ride back there and do some hoorahing of my own.
He turned his livid gaze to Saber riding behind O'Malley.
Billy, you have a beef with Kenny? Just remember how fast he is with that hog leg.
Sure, it's true.
I remember 2 years ago, little Kenny shot a deputy U.S. Marshal in front of the Republican Saloon in Wichita. 2 bullets right through the heart before the badge toter even had his gun out of his holster.
So, there you have it.
Kenny Wilkes grinned as he rode, relaxing now and swaying in his saddle. The wiry, toe-headed whelp, whose pallid face was peeling from sunburn, kept his hand glued to his pistol. The brim of his oversized bowler carried a pound of desert sand kicked up by the horses. Billy Saber squinted his pale eyes skeptically at Hudson, stretching his lips away from his crooked front teeth.
I don't believe it.
If you don't believe it, why don't you and me have us a little lead-swapping contest?
Save it, Kenny. Shooting might draw patches.
Besides, he needed all 3 of these men to help get him to Wild Horse. If Apaches showed, he'd need all the guns he could get. As soon as he'd made it to Tucson, these men could perforate each other all they wanted, for all Hudson cared. It would save him from having to use his own ammunition. They rode for another hour, the sun angling overhead. Stony ridges and shelves rose around them, with here and there distant mountain ranges lolling against the liquid horizon. Occasionally, they saw a hawk riding a thermal, or a roadrunner would make a red splash across their trail. But mostly, they saw only rocks and orange caliche between cactus patches.
How come I never heard of no town called Wild Horse, Paige?
'Cause it never was much of a town.
Hudson glanced casually at the bones.
It boomed and collapsed in pretty near the same year. Rick tried to mine there before we pulled the stage job and came up with the gold. Guess he figured it wasn't too far from our pa's ranch, and he'd be able to find it again easy enough once he got shit of me.
Sure is awful when a brother double-crosses a brother. Ain't natural.
Yeah, well, we were only half-brothers, and I used to beat the shit out of Rick all the time when we was growing up. Pa never cared. Hell, he never cared for Rick neither.
Your pa is still ranch there, Paige?
They were climbing out of the wash through spindly aspens and entering a narrow valley.
The old bastard died in the privy the year after the robbery. Reckon his heart couldn't take the shame of having 2 sons turn all hoot and then one killing the other. Or maybe my stepma told him what I did to her.
O'Malley, Wilkes, and Saber shared dubious looks.
What'd you do to her, Paige?
Hudson hipped around in his saddle to stare at the others.
Nothing she wasn't asking for, the way she used to dress for a woman her age.
Hudson winked and turned back around. Saber grinned thoughtfully as he rode. Kenny Wilkes shook his head.
You'd have to pay me a lot of dinero before I'd slip it to my stepma. I mean a lot.
Shut up.
Hudson jerked his arm down for silence. He pulled on his reins and the horse lifted its head back from the bit.
What is it?
O'Malley followed Hudson's sweeping gaze around the rocky ridges abutting both sides of the valley. The slopes were several hundred feet high, and the west angling sun brushed them with copper.
See that big rock over there on that hill? The big one looks like a hull of a ship. I seen a shadow slip behind it.
Shit.
Saber drew his mount abreast of Hudson and O'Malley.
Indians?
Wilkes drew his revolver.
Put your gun away.
Wilkes only frowned, pistol in hand. Cleavis jerked his head angrily.
No! Put it away!
Reluctantly, Wilkes holstered his six-shooter. They were all looking at O'Malley now, puzzled.
If that's Apaches up there, and who else could it be? It's best not to look too eager for a fight.
Okay, so what do we do?
O'Malley ran a gloved hand through his shaggy, dusty beard, cuffed his high-crowned hat back off his forehead, and gently kneed his horse forward.
We ride slow, real casual-like, and don't nobody get the trigger itch. Only shoot if you're fired at.
Hudson was dubious. He'd grown up in Apache country and was aware of the Indians' threat. But he figured O'Malley, who'd made a living out of fighting the savages, knew what he was talking about. The big Irishman had tangled with plenty of Apaches when he'd hunted their scalps along the border, before the army had thrown him in the sweatbox for selling stolen army remounts in Mexico and for sundry other sins he rarely talked about unless inspired by sour mash. Bowing to O'Malley's experience, Hudson gave him the lead, slipping in behind him, riding abreast of Saber. The horses rode slowly through the canyon. A jackrabbit scurried across the trail and disappeared into a hole between two boulders. The hair on the back of Hudson's neck pricked, but he saw nothing until they were halfway through the canyon. Then, out of nowhere, on the north-facing slope, only 50 feet to Hudson's right, a short figure appeared atop a boulder, crouching like a cat about to spring. To this man's left, another figure stepped casually out from behind another rock. As O'Malley sawed back on his horse's reins, two more Indians appeared, hunkering atop rocks on the other side of the canyon. Their red bandanas, calico shirts, and long obsidian hair whipped in the breeze. Most held bows notched with arrows. Two held spears.
Easy, boys. You want to die right quick, just reach for your irons.
Oh, shit.
Shut up.
Hudson smiled up at the ridges where the short, dark figure stood staring down at them coldly. He'd heard all his life that one thing you never showed an Indian was fear. One of the Indians was so close, Hudson could hear the man's stolen cavalry pants fluttering against his legs. It was this man who spoke, gesturing with his left hand. To Hudson, the clipped grunts and guttural spats made no sense at all. Listening intently, O'Malley seemed to understand. When the Indian stopped talking, the Irishman spoke in what sounded like the Indian's own nonsensical tongue, his face flushing with frustration as he flailed mentally for the words he needed. After the Indian had spoken again, O'Malley turned to Hudson.
They want our pack mules.
Tell them to diddle themselves.
We don't give them the pack mules. There's going to be a fight.
So what? There's four of them and four of us.
Uh-huh. Look up yonder.
Hudson followed the Irishman's gaze down the canyon. He counted at least six more Indians perched atop the rocks along the trail, looking this way.
Oh, shit.
Billy, if you don't shut up, I'm gonna cut your ears off and hang them around my neck.
Hudson stared darkly down canyon.
I say we give them the mules. That gold ain't gonna do us any good if we're too dead to spend it. Besides, you ever seen Apache torture tricks?
Shut up, Kenny.
Hudson looked back at O'Malley.
How come they don't just ambush us?
Because we're well-armed and we look like border roughs. They've probably been losing warriors to army fights of late. Can't afford to lose any more. They need food bad and would rather get it the easy way.
If we turn over the mules, you really think they'll let us pass?
Usually an Injun's word is good. If they wanted to fight, I'd say we'd already be fighting.
Hudson thought it over as he stared at the round-faced Indian nearest their trail. Dried, crusty blood streaked both legs of the dusty blue cavalry pants. Fingering one of the two white scars on his face, Hudson glanced at Wilkes.
Oh, come on, turn the mules loose, Kenny.
Wilkes slipped his knife from his belt sheath, turned in his saddle, and cut the mules loose from his horse's tail. Dumbly, the mules just stood there, blinking, their withers occasionally rippling at flies. Cleavis spit a few phrases at the Apache leader. For several seconds, the Apache just stood there as though carved from stone. Then, his face expressionless, he threw an arm out, indicating the trail down the canyon.
I reckon we can go.
Let's go, boys. Nice and slow.
Keep your hands away from your guns and your chins up. Don't look scared.
Hell, I ain't afraid of these red devils.
Slowly, the four outlaws made their way down the canyon, watching the Indians standing on the rocks around them. The Indians stared dully, holding their notched bows in their hands. Hudson eyed them, smiling a thin smile, trying to look bold, riding with both hands on the reins. Thieving, stinking dog eaters. If he and his boys weren't outnumbered, these savages would know what hot lead felt like. After an eternity, they reached the opening of the canyon. Two Apaches stood there, one on either side of the trail. One was an old man, judging from the deep lines in his face and the heavy bags under his eyes. The other was a young brave, no more than 15. He was several inches taller than the old man, but he still wasn't over 6 feet. He carried a bow and an arrow quiver, and an old model Navy Colt protruded from his sash. As he approached the pair, Hudson shuttled his gaze from one to the other. Then he passed between them and turned his gaze ahead, feeling his back tingle, waiting for an arrow.
Billy? Kenny? You two still back there?
We're back here, Paige. Looks like we made it.
Just keep riding.
O'Malley led the procession down a deep grade and onto a desert flat. A broad expanse of creosote and greasewood opened before them. An ocean-like mirage fluttered on the horizon. Saguaros dipped and rolled like ships at sea. Several minutes later, O'Malley reined his horse to a halt and quartered around in the trail. The others did likewise, gazing behind them at the blue cleft in the mountain through which they just passed. He didn't see any Apaches storming after them.
Damn. Glad that's over.
Me too.
Wilkes rubbed his arm, which tension had caused to grow sore again.
Thieving bastards. If I ever catch an Indian out alone someplace, ooh, I'm gonna cut his innards out and wrap them around his neck.
Well, we know one thing.
What's that?
If anybody's still trailing us, they won't be for long. Ain't no more white eyes getting through that canyon. Uh-uh, not a chance.
Who in the hell would be back there anyway? We done finished off that posse, and that town marshal ain't gonna trouble himself.
I was thinking Massey. That boy's got a mad on for us.
Not even that trigger-itchy squaw dog would be fool enough to trail us through patchy country.
Hudson reined his horse past O'Malley, retaking his lead.
Come on, boys. We're flapping our jaws in burning daylight.
Kuno's hand was wrapped tightly to keep it from bleeding. It grieved him, but the pain wasn't as bad as knowing the hand was virtually useless. The deep cut had tightened the muscles and made gripping a pistol butt impossible. When he had to shoot, he'd have to use his left hand. That meant he'd have to take down the Hudson gang one at a time. That meant, in turn, that he'd have to get them separated somewhere. The second night after his tussle with the cat, he and Marcella camped near a sump in a dry creek bed. Galetta grass rimmed the blue-green pool, which smelled faintly of alkali. Kuno built a small fire and brewed coffee, and they ate a rabbit he'd snared.
So, what about this gold?
He'd sunk back against his saddle and was awkwardly rolling a smoke with his good hand. She looked at him sharply, her round eyes flashing in the firelight.
What about it?
Don't worry.
He twisted the misshapen cylinder.
I'm not interested in acquiring any of it. It's stolen, I take it. I'm just wondering where it came from and how you come to find out about it.
Why should I tell you?
Kuno struck a match and lit the cigarette, blowing smoke out the side of his mouth. He shrugged a shoulder.
Okay, don't. Just thought we'd make a little conversation.
Why are you so interested in the gold all of a sudden?
Forget it.
I suppose you feel you're entitled to some? Because you're going to kill Hudson for me.
Listen, lady. When I kill Hudson, it ain't gonna be for you or any goddamn gold. Don't you forget that. I don't give a shit about your gold.
Her eyes blazed for a moment, then dropped to the ground.
Paige and his brother, Rick, rode in the same gang for a while. I was Rick's woman. A year ago, they robbed a stagecoach and found gold bars in the strongbox. The group separated, Paige taking half the men, Rick taking the other half, because they knew a large posse would be after them. Rick took the gold with him and double-crossed Paige.
He hid the gold?
See. He wanted the law to settle down before he and his men tried making a run for Mexico. His mistake was visiting me in Prescott. Paige was waiting for him. He killed Rick after he tortured him, and I ran away in the night.
You were afraid Hudson figured you knew where the gold was hid.
Only a few days ago in the roadhouse, I learned that Rick had hidden a map to the gold in my mother's silver crucifix. I had been carrying the map for a year and didn't know it.
Kuno smiled wryly as he lay back on his elbows and blew cigarette smoke at the stars.
Hudson knew it, because he tortured the information out of Rick.
See, and he took it.
Now you're gonna get it back, or die trying.
And why should I not? Rick died for that money. He would want me to have it.
Unmoved, Kuno flicked his cigarette into the fire.
'Cause it ain't yours.
Huh. Who are you to judge? Mr. Vigilante with his smoking guns. Ha!
Maybe, but I'd die before I whored myself out like you done. Then pissed and moaned about it like I'd had no choice in the matter.
She stood staring at him, her nostrils flaring, her eyes glinting like sunstruck coal.
Bastard!
She plucked a knife off a rock.
Bastard!
She bolted toward him, swinging the knife. He reached up and caught her wrist a foot away from his neck. In the same motion, he kicked her feet out from under her and threw her onto her back.
Bastard! I kill you!
He climbed on top of her, pinning her arms down with his hands. He squeezed her wrist until her hand opened and the knife fell into the grass. He slapped her with his open palm. She stared up at him, her eyes slowly losing their fire, her exposed cleavage rising and falling as she breathed.
You do like it rough, eh?
She ground her groin against his and touched the tip of her tongue to her lip.
Well then, what are you waiting for?
She lifted her head to kiss him, but he jerked his own head away. Slowly, holding her gaze, he pushed onto his knees and from his knees to his feet. He turned away from her, walked over to a tree, and sat down. She got up and straightened her clothes. She looked at him again with that funny smile, ran her hand over her mouth, then turned abruptly and walked away toward the pool. Sitting with his back to the tree, he adjusted his bandage on his hand. He felt sheepish about insulting her, but not enough to apologize. What had angered him most, he realized now, was that she'd had a point. He'd been raised well enough to know that vengeance was no less a sin than thievery and greed. Turn the other cheek and all that bullshit. But it did nothing to soften his resolve to kill without mercy, to even the score. He reclined against his saddle and lowered his hat over his eyes. He needed to sleep. He had a feeling tomorrow would be a big day. He knew Marcella well enough to know that her fire had died and that she was no longer a danger. Not an immediate one, anyway.
We're gaining on him.
The next morning, Kuno hunkered down on his haunches and ran two fingers of his left hand along a faint hoofprint scoring the flinty clay. A hot wind had picked up when he and Marcella had broken camp. It blew now, nudging the sand around the hoofprint.
How far away do you think they are?
Judging by their tracks, I'd say we'll catch up to them tonight or early tomorrow.
He glanced around at the sage-tufted tables rising around him. Sun-blasted monoliths rose in the south. Through these jagged dinosaur teeth, the killer's trail twisted, rising over a grade behind which Kuno could see only a vast yellow sky splotched with crimson. Staring at that ominous hell sky and imagining how it would be killing the first of the Hudson gang, poking a barrel against the man's temple and pulling the trigger, he became aware of a hot wind blowing through him as well as without, anticipation twitching his injured right hand and making his spine burn. He stood quickly, toe to stirrup. In a moment, he and Marcella were heading up the grade, two mounted riders silhouetted against the crimson hell sky that appeared to pulse and throb, gradually expanding as though fed by a building storm. They rode with renewed vigor. They stopped only twice to water their horses, but late in the afternoon, faint pistol pops sounded. Kuno sawed back on his reins and looked around, one hand on his revolver's butt. In the northeast, about 1,000 yards away, a thin dust crown rose. Squinting against the sun glare and shading his eyes with his other hand, Kuno made out an inky red stagecoach at the crown's head. The coach fishtailed around a rim rock behind 6 frantic horses, chewing up the ground with terrified abandon, their ears laid flat against their heads. The driver cracked a black snake whip over the team's backs while the shotgun messenger craned around in his seat and fired his coach gun from his shoulder. In a moment, Kuno saw the reason for the wild ride. At least 12 Apaches were bearing down on the stagecoach from behind, loosing arrows and tossing spears, their short-legged pinto ponies galloping so fast they were mere blurs in the dust kicked up by the coach's team and its iron-rimmed wheels.
Damn it all!
Kuno turned to face Marcella.
Wait here. Yeah!
He gigged Renegade into a gallop toward the rimrock. He galloped a serpentine course around the sage tufts, the boulders, tracing a wide semicircle around the rimrock. He crossed a dry wash, traversed a knoll, and leapt a natural levee. The rim rock fell back on his right, revealing clay-colored dust roiling up from the sage and low-growing desert trees. He couldn't see much more than a few moving figures and dust. He reined his paint to a stop. The horse sidestepped, fearful of the Indian's hellish cacophony. Peering into the dust, Kuno dismounted, tied Renegade to a mesquite shrub, and shucked his Winchester. He walked through the shrubs, keeping his head low. When the chaos sounded like it was only 100 or so yards away, he made for a low escarpment rising on his right. Climbing it, he hunkered behind a rectangular, flat-topped boulder and cast his gaze into the flat below. The stage lay on its side as though dropped from the sky. The horses had broken away and were gone. From this distance, about 70 yards, Kuno could see the Indians milling around the stage, loosing arrows and spears as they finished off the passengers. Some of the attackers were mounted, several were not. Those not savaging passengers were tearing through the strewn luggage. As the dust thinned, Kuno saw several bodies scattered amongst the sage. Several yards behind the wrecked coach, a hatless man in ragged trail garb lay sprawled belly down over a large rock, arms and legs hanging over the rock's blood-washed sides. He'd just started to stand to walk away when movement caught his eye and he cast his gaze down to the flat again. A man, or a boy by the size of him, was crawling out from a sage clump where he'd apparently been thrown when the stage had flipped. The kid glanced over his shoulder at the Indians, most of whom were now focused on the woman, as he crawled on all fours away from the stage. From the halting way he moved, dragging his left leg, he appeared to be injured. Approaching a cracked boulder and a mesquite tree, he cast another fearful look behind him, then crawled into the crevice between the boulder and the tree, hunkering down where Kuno could see only his head and part of a shoulder. Giving a start, he swung his rifle around, but dropped the barrel when he saw Marcella climbing the rise. Her gun hung low on her thigh and her hat shaded her face.
I told you to stay put.
Ignoring him, Marcella sat down beside him, peering around the boulder.
What is happening?
Apaches ran down a stage.
Below, the blonde woman had stopped screaming and could no longer be seen within the cluster of frenzied Apaches. The one who'd taken her first was walking back to the stage, kicking through the luggage and strewn clothes.
Apaches run down stages all the time. There is nothing we can do. Let's go.
She started to stand. Kuno grabbed her arm and cast his gaze back down to where the boy was hiding between the boulder and the mesquite tree.
There's a kid down there.
So?
He's injured and he's hiding.
They'll find him soon enough. We must get back after Hudson.
Kuno stared down at the flat, pondering the predicament. True, the Apaches would probably find the kid, but something would not let Kuno abandon him while there was even a slim chance of saving him. He shook his head.
We wait. When those Apaches are done having their fun down there, they'll leave.
Marcella stared at him, perplexed. She knew it would do no good to argue. When Kuno Massey had made up his mind, there was no changing it. She leaned back against the rock and folded her arms across her breasts. She knew it might be a long wait, and it was. When the Apaches had had their fill of the woman, they killed her, set the stage on fire, and milled around the inferno until the fire had nearly died and the sun had slipped below the desert's rocky rim. Against a violet sky, Kuno saw their silhouettes gallop away, the hooves pounding crisply in the dusk's hushed silence. When they disappeared in the velvety darkness, Kuno told Marcella again to wait where she was. Hefting his Winchester, he stepped out from behind the rock and started down the knoll. When he'd made it to the flat, he paused, looked around the smoldering rubble of the stage, and headed for the boy's hiding place.
Hey, kid. Come on out here. I'm friendly.
Kuno walked over to the rock and squatted down. All he could see were two wide, staring eyes in the crevice between the rock and the tree.
Come on, damn it.
Finding an arm, he pulled. Kuno jerked him out from his hiding place and pulled him gruffly back toward the knoll. The boy stumbled along on Kuno's heels. A lanky kid in a homespun shirt, cheap string tie, patched broadcloth trousers, and a misshapen slouch hat. Near the base of the knoll, the kid fell, his arm jerking out of Kuno's grasp.
Ow!
The boy clutched his ankle, probably injured during the wreck.
Come on, blast it!
Kuno gave the boy's arm a violent jerk.
We don't have time!
Kuno whipped around, his blood turning to jelly. Apparently, several Apaches had been lingering near the stage and had heard Kuno and the boy, or had seen them on the knoll. An arrow whistled through the air to Kuno's left and pinged against a rock.
Run!
Kuno jerked the lad to his feet and gave him a brusque shove from behind. The boy stumbled and ran limping up the hill. Kuno dropped to a knee and pumped several rounds at the approaching riders. He wasn't sure if he hit him. Shooting with his left hand was a cockeyed maneuver. But he thought he heard a yell above the rifle's reports, and about 20 yards below him, the long-haired silhouettes broke their ascent and scattered. Kuno turned and ran, tripped over a bush, and fell on his elbows.
Shit!
Scrambling back to his feet, he overtook the boy, grabbed his arm, and pulled him to the knoll's crest. Marcella was there, outlined against the sky in which several bright stars were kindling.
Look out!
Kuno turned to see an Apache on horseback thundering up the knoll, so quickly bridging the gap between them that Kuno could feel the ground shake beneath his boots. The Apache drew back the long lance in his hand, the steel blade decorated with tribal feathers glinting in the starlight.
No!
Kuno fumbled with his rifle, the blood rushing in his ears as he awaited the spear point he knew was about to impale him. As the Apache was about to throw his spear, Kuno had the rifle to his shoulder, but the butt slipped off his cheek as he tried to steady the barrel with his bandaged right hand. He blinked, his forehead burning, anticipating the lance. Then the Indian jerked back twice as his arm swung forward, launching the feathered spear, which cut through the slack of Kuno's shirt and buried its head in the ground. By this time, Kuno had steadied the rifle and took aim at the horse's chest. The Apache flew back over his Pinto's right rear hip and hit the ground. The horse came down, and Kuno dove right, avoiding the scissoring hooves. As he scrambled to his knees, he heard Marcella's pistol barking again. Casting his gaze down the knoll, he saw more figures approaching on horseback. Still on his knees, he lifted his rifle to help Marcella. When the Indians had scattered again, he stood.
Run! Move!
The boy was crouched on the ground, frozen with fear.
Leave him!
Kuno thrust his rifle after her and jerked the boy up and over his left shoulder.
Oh, turn, idiot!
Marcella turned and ran down the other side of the knoll. Kuno followed her. At the knoll's bottom, Marcella stopped and looked around, confused.
This way!
Kuno brushed past her, the boy hanging limply over his shoulder. Strangely quiet, the kid just hung there as Kuno retraced his footsteps across the desert flats, weaving and stumbling around bush and rocks. Halfway back to the horses, he stopped and shifted the boy from his left shoulder to his right.
Shh!
Marcella ran up behind him. She froze and looked around slowly while Kuno listened. The Apaches were following slowly, unsure of their course and no doubt wary of an ambush.
You could not leave well enough alone, could you?
Shut up!
Kuno moved out. He found their mounts 5 minutes later, standing in a swale with the pack horse. He set the boy on the pack horse and untied the horse from Renegade's tail.
Let's ride.
Marcella mounted her Pinto and lanced Kuno with a heated gaze.
You have probably gotten us killed for some kid we don't even know.
Yeah.
Kuno gigged Renegade forward, heading south, Marcella urging her Pinto behind him. When he'd ridden for 20 minutes, he halted the skewbald paint on a bench near a steep-walled ravine and sat quietly, listening, hearing nothing but the breeze ruffling some mountain scrub along the trail. Marcella had halted her Pinto and was facing him angrily.
The luck of the foolish!
Ignoring her, he kneed Renegade down the flinty grade.
Not out of it yet, but we'll ride till we find a good place to hunker down for the night.
A half hour later, Kuno found a hollow nestled in shrubs with a scarp rising behind it. He helped the boy down against a boulder. Hobbling the horses in a nearby patch of grama grass, he and Marcella silently stripped the tack and packs from their backs and watered the tired beasts. With the Apaches about, they didn't even talk about a fire. Marcella slouched off to the bivouac while Kuno climbed the scarp and listened for horses. When he hadn't heard or seen anything of the Apaches 20 minutes later, he returned to the camp. Marcella was already asleep in her blankets, curled up on her left side, hat pulled over her cheek to shield her eyes from the starlight. The boy sat against the cracked, egg-shaped rock, legs crossed beneath him, his right ankle swollen. Kuno set his rifle down and picked up his canteen. He popped the stopper and offered the water to the boy, who accepted it indifferently. He took a sip and paused. Apparently more thirsty than he'd thought, he took several more swallows, lowered the canteen, and ran his hand across his mouth. He handed the canteen back to Kuno, who took a long drink, water dribbling down his chin and neck.
You sure that ankle isn't broken? If it's broken, we should set it.
The boy shook his head.
What's your name?
The boy shivered, staring off into the darkness.
I have to call you something.
Sandy. Sandy Hillman.
Your folks on that stage?
The boy didn't do or say anything for several seconds. Then he nodded dully.
I'm sorry.
The boy didn't say anything. Kuno knew there was nothing to say. Kuno grabbed a burlap food sack off his saddle and fished inside for some jerky. He stuck a stick in his mouth and offered the bag to the boy, who ignored it. Kuno understood. After what he'd been through, he probably wouldn't feel like eating again for days.
Best get some sleep. We'll be up early and riding hard.
He wasn't curious about the boy. Who Sandy was, where he was going, or where he'd come from meant nothing to Kuno. He'd rescued the boy from the Indians out of some intellectual nod to brotherhood. The feeling was only skin deep. July's murder had left him without compassion, cold as the stars. He'd begin looking for Hudson again in the morning. He grabbed his rifle in both hands, grinding the butt into the sand, trying to will the damn sun to rise. The sun rose only after what seemed like an endless night. The wind was blowing again, and by 10 o'clock, Kuno doubted he could have recognized Hudson's trail even if he cut it. Because of the Indians, he didn't dare backtrack where he'd left it when he'd rescued the kid.
Okay.
Reining his horse to a halt on a narrow spur, he squinted his eyes against the blowing grit.
Where's Wild Horse Basin?
Marcella gazed off across a deep canyon falling away on their right. Behind Kuno, the young man sat the pack horse rigidly, his slouch hat pulled low so the wind wouldn't blow it away.
There! It must be there!
Marcella pointed across the canyon toward a range of low blue mountains 20 or 30 miles away.
You don't know for sure?
She looked around, her eyes worried and frustrated.
I only crossed this country once, a long time ago.
She sat her horse, regarding him with furrowed brows, holding her hat on her head with one hand, lips set in a pout.
You and the boy wait down in that ravine yonder. I'm gonna take a look around. If I'm not back before dark, sit tight. It might take a while.
Kuno reined his horse away.
Where are you going?
To try to pick up Hudson's trail. Where do you think?
For the next 2 hours, he angled a quartering trail from east to west. The way this toothy, canyon-scarred country was laid out, he had to drift south for a while and then north again. But his intention was mainly to drift east to west and hope that if he rode long enough and looked hard enough, he'd cut sign. Around 3 o'clock that afternoon, blown sand caking his face and his sweat-patched shirt hanging on his muscular trunk, he sawed back on the paint's reins and gave his impassioned gaze to the ground. Four sets of hoof marks showed plainly in the lee of a rocky scarp angling southwest.
I'll be goddamned.
He whipped his head up when he caught a whiff of wood smoke on the wind. He looked around. To his right was only a boulder-strewn rise, buttery yellow in the sun glare. To his left, a playa white with alkali under a sand-colored curtain of blowing grit stretched to the horizon. Before him was a gently rising sage and bear grass flat stippled with distant buttes. Another fleeting smoke scent came to his nose on the gyrating wind. It had to be coming from the other side of the slope on his right. Rubbing his chin, Kuno regarded the boulders thoughtfully. He doubted the smoke could be that of the Hudson gang, which he figured had gained another half day on him. Still, he had to investigate. If the smoke belonged to Apaches, he had to know their exact location and number. Dismounting, he ground-hitched Renegade back along the wall in the shade of overhanging rock. Rifle in hand, he found a path twisting around the boulders on the slope. He moved slowly, looking around, disliking how exposed he was on the playa side of the slope. When he neared the top, he crouched low, jumped onto a flat sloping boulder, climbed it, and leaned against a stone wall shouldering up on his right. He looked between two more boulders into a narrow sandy wash on the other side of the butte. He could smell the smoke better now, as well as the rabbit meat roasting in the fire about 30 yards below, in a shallow pit scooped out of the sand. It was a small fire, the flames wind-battered and torn, the smoke wafting and disappearing nearly as quickly as it rose from the meat skewered on sharpened sticks. Holding the sticks in a ragged circle around the blaze were three young Apaches. Kuno ducked behind a rock. He slid another look around the boulder. The Indians' three horses were hobbled in a thin patch of galetta grass on the other side of the wash, their manes and tails blowing in the wind. There appeared to be just these three Apaches. No women or children, or even any gear except bows and lances piled around a bush. These were warriors on the hoof, probably part of the same gang that had attacked the stage. Kuno could not rule out the possibility they were looking for him, Marcella, and the boy. He ducked behind the rock again, squeezing the Winchester stock with his left hand as troubled thoughts darkened his eyes. He could slip away from the Indians now and maybe not see them again. Or he might run into them later on when the upper hand was theirs instead of his. They seemed to be traversing the same country. He squeezed the rifle stock harder with his left hand. No use postponing trouble. He'd take them here and now. He stole another peek at the three Apaches. The chatterbox was on his feet, wheeling in circles and making chopping motions with his right hand. As Kuno watched him kicking sand with his moccasins, he discovered another problem. The three were too far away for Kuno with his gimpy hand to take them all down with the Winchester. He might get one, but he doubted he could get another shell jacked into the chamber before the other two were all over him. That meant he had to get down close and try to surprise them. Kuno took a minute to ponder his strategy. Finally, he sat down and removed his boots and socks. Rising again, he hefted his rifle and stole another look down from the slope. All three Indians were sitting down now. They'd plucked the steaks from the fire and were hungrily eating the meat. Kuno had heard stories of the Apache's acute sense of smell and hearing, and he could only hope the tearing wind would cover his scent and any noise he might make descending the boulder-littered slope. Barefoot, he slipped between the two boulders at the slope's crest. The Winchester in his left hand, he jumped down to another rock and crouched behind the one in front of it. Remaining low, he cat-footed from rock to rock down the slope until he found himself bending low behind a flat-topped stone directly behind the three Apaches. Jaws taut, he slipped a careful glance around the boulder. In that quick look, he satisfied himself the Indians were still in their same positions around the fire. One had finished eating, however, which meant the other two would finish soon. Kuno had to move quickly. He backed up a couple of steps, then ran forward and sprang atop the flat-topped rock. Smoothly, his face stonily calm, he raised the Winchester to his left shoulder and aimed at the Apache directly to his right. As the Indian flew back against the ground, Kuno dropped the rifle from his left hand, palmed his buoy in his injured right, and leapt to the ground before the fire. With a savage thrust of his right leg, he kicked several burning branches at the Indian directly across from him. The Indian had begun standing. Now he turned and shook his arms wildly as flames leapt at his buckskin breeches, scorching the leather and basting his ankles. Kuno whipped his right hand up, throwing his buoy end over end, the blade disappearing to the hilt in the Apache's belly. Before Kuno could turn to the last Apache, the beefy savage was on top of him, all slippery, smelly 200-plus pounds of him. He drove Kuno sideways to the ground. Kneeling on top of Kuno, the Indian reached for the knife on his belt. The Indian rolled to the left, and Kuno thrust himself to his feet. In his mind, these men became the men who had killed July. His face became a snarling mask of rage. The rage made his head and limbs light and dulled the pain in his right hand. As the Apache climbed to his feet, Kuno dove on top of him, throwing him back down. He punched the Indian several times in the face. The Indian kneed Kuno off. Kuno rolled to his knees, but when the Indian jumped at him, he was ready, rising, pivoting to his left. He buried his bandaged right hand deep in the savage's belly. The hand seared with pain, but Kuno hardly noticed. The Apache looked stunned. He wasn't sure how long he'd had the Indian down beneath him and had been pummeling the Apache's head with a heavy rock before he froze, holding the rock aloft. Wild-eyed, he stared down at the Apache. Somehow, he'd gotten the man's calico bandana down around his neck. He was holding the ends with his left hand and using them to jerk the Indian's head up as he'd brought the stone down to meet it. There wasn't much left of the Indian's head now. The right temple was caved in like a watermelon, matting the hair and entire face with blood and white flecks of brain matter. The Indian's trunk hung slack in Kuno's hand. Kuno released the bandana. The Indian's head dropped to the sand. Heaving off his knees, Kuno stood. He looked down at the dead Indian and then at the other two lying about the fire. The wood he'd kicked from the fire lay strewn, pale orange flames licking at it between wind gusts. Kuno retrieved his knife, slipped it into his scabbard, and moved toward the slope. His feet were heavy. Suddenly, he became aware of his throbbing right hand and looked down at it. It hung at his side, the bandage gone, awash in blood. Ignoring it, he started up the slope toward his horse. In the ravine where Kuno had left her and the boy, Marcella sat on a small ledge, shelving out from the rock behind her, and brought her cigarette to her lips. Dully, she regarded the boy sitting several feet away, looking off down the canyon, his own face expressionless, the ceaseless wind working at his short brown hair, shaved high above his ears. She didn't blame the boy for the delay, nor for luring the Indians onto their trail. She blamed Kuno. He was the one who'd wanted to save the boy from the Apaches. Still, she could not help regarding the kid with mute scorn as she smoked, shaking her head, then sliding her gaze around the sun-seared ridges towering around them. To make herself feel better, she tried to think about what she would do with the money when she found it. A fancy brothel in San Francisco? Maybe a saloon with a dozen stylish bartenders and several private gambling salons? Interrupting her reverie, a light flashed in the corner of her vision. She turned her head left, shaded her eyes with a hand. On a distant southern pinnacle, the light flashed again, as though off a belt buckle or a spur. Squinting her eyes, she saw a man-shaped shadow flit amongst the rocks and disappear. Lifting her hand to her eyes, Marcella stood and stared. A man was out there, a single rider. Could it be Kuno? She studied the place in the ridge where the rider had disappeared for several minutes, the boy watching her as he squinted against the sun glare. If the rider had been Kuno, he'd been riding in the wrong direction, away from her. Marcella's pulse quickened. There were only two reasons he would do that. One, he was lost. Two, he had found Hudson's tracks and was more determined to run the gang to ground than to return for her and the boy. The second possibility weighed on her heavily. She wheeled for the horses.
Come on, if you're coming with me, boy.
Although she resented his presence, she couldn't leave him, mostly because she was afraid of what Kuno might do to her if she did.